unconditionally when I was unlovable. He has given me a gift of life and love. And he continues to this very day to be a selfless, kind, incredible man. So don't disappoint me. Please welcome Kenny.
Hi, my name is Kenny.
Kenny!
Grateful member of Al-Anon. It's taken a long time for me to allow myself to do something like that. Life is in session. It's not a dress rehearsal. I'm not living in I'm not living in a self-imposed jail, wondering how to change the actions of someone else, heartbroken from the things that I'm going through as a result of living with them. There's years and years that have gone by, countless times that I didn't have the patience, I didn't want to wait, I didn't want to do the work, I didn't want to feel the pain of doing the work. I grew up on the East Coast, on Long Island. Including my mom and dad, there were 8 of us in the family. My father was alcoholic, my aunt was alcoholic, my mother's parents were alcoholic. My brother's alcoholic. Somebody's phone is ringing. And it's not mine. Anyway. There were times growing up in the home I grew up in, there were many times, and actually I just had a few flashes while I was sitting here waiting, that I haven't remembered until I was just sitting in this chair. And that to me speaks to the power of recovery. And there were times where the pain of being in the house with my father, going through the experience of the experiences of abuse that were so incredibly painful and so uncomfortable, and I felt like I was stuck in a place that I couldn't get out of. And I can remember countless times saying to myself, I can't wait till I'm old enough to get out of here. Along the way, the history of my recovery has been like shockwaves. Coming to understand that there were secrets that I grew into as a normal way of being and a normal way of thinking, and the way that I kept them was a way of establishing my life, a way of living that was safe enough to feel like I wasn't going to be harmed, that disconnected me from myself and the world, and I had no idea how deeply ingrained they were. And each and every time that I came to a new understanding with myself, when something came up that was new through the course of doing this work, the shock and the pain of that, combined with the anger and the rage, along with the confusion of how to react and how to be in that in life, was something that it still wasn't as hard and it wasn't as painful as the things that happened. It still didn't match that pain. And I was just saying to Stephen before, when I came in and, you know, just greeting different people in the meeting, I said, boy, it feels like I'm in a feathered nest. You know, it's just so comfortable. And I know who I am today. I have a semblance of understanding around who I am, what I do, what my boundaries are, where I begin and end, you know, my self-respect, my ability to detach with love, my ability to perceive that unhealed part in others, but still allow the space for the other person or individual to be who they are in that without my having to start figuring out like 3 or 4 steps ahead how to manipulate the situation. Like to this day, one of the things I understand very clearly for myself, which is a very, very old, old habit, is if I start arranging things, like if I'm sitting at a table in the company of someone, and if I find myself arranging things and putting them in the right place, I know that's a red flag. So this is also a long, this is a long period of time to actually talk, and I'm not really much of a talker. So I'm rolling some things out here kind of slow, but I'll get there. Along the way, it's taken decades to grow into a life from where I come from, of having a beautiful profession that I love, a home, a job, relationships with family that are based in an understanding for me of what will work, and being able to still uphold love for my family without allowing myself to be caught up in the dysfunction that comes with that. And there's also been a lot of work that's taken place around the anger and the rage from those first years. And I mean, you know, growing up in a house up to the age of 18, you know, 18 years, that's a long time if you think about what happens growing up in a house with five brothers and sisters, mother and father, and really never knowing what to expect. That kind of learning to read body language at a very, very young age, to stay out of the way, Or learning not to feel because I would be threatened for that. And also, over this course of time, you know, there were a number of years, a lot of finger pointing and a lot of blame, a lot of resentment. But the work that's been involved in my recovery in Al-Anon is really, if I don't let go, I'm not free. I had to learn a whole new way to be free. I didn't understand what that meant. I was too afraid. The level and the degree of, you know, without going into detail, was pretty severe, the level of abuse. And I was very closed, shut down. And I have gone through, over the course of my time in recovery, I've gone through a lot of therapy, gone through rehabilitation in a contained program, and little by little, even tonight, I have to say, quite frankly and honestly, that voice, you know, that voice was rearing its head around, you know, you can't tell your secrets. You can't talk about your secrets. You can't talk about what happened. You can't talk about those alcoholic relationships. You can't betray your family. You can't betray your friends. Well, what am I left with? I'm left with the very thing that I, you know, without sounding dramatic, you know, sometimes it really didn't feel like it was worth being here. When that level and degree of feeling trapped, but being released from that through this work and through the love that people have shown me over the years, it's like my heart did for me what my mind couldn't. My heart has shown my mind the way. My heart has been healing the pain of what happened and the pain of those relationships. I can remember there was a point in my recovery where I didn't speak with my parents for quite some time. It simply came to that point finally. And it was a very difficult point, because to take that space was very threatening. Like, literally, that's the kind of illness that comes in this suffering, is this fear, this real fear that I'm going to be hurt in some way. And I remember I finally came to the point of being ready to address my dad in a conversation. And I told him, I asked him to go out for a ride with me, and I wanted to talk with him. And he got very uncomfortable. And we ended up going, I grew up in a small town, and take a ride around the bay. I grew up on Long Island in a small town called Bellport, and it's on the south shore of Long Island. And you can go down and drive around the dock. And we went down and we parked down at the dock. And I still can't believe I said it, but I did. I told him, I said, I've come to a point with myself in my life, and in my recovery that I can't not have a relationship with you anymore. But I'm just so angry with you. I'm so angry. I've just been wishing you were dead. I've just been wishing and waiting for the phone call from Karen or Keith or Kathy. Keith, Kathy, Kevin, Karen, Kenny, Kelly. That's where all the trouble started. I said I'd just been waiting for the call that you're dead because I just hate you. And I feel like I've never had a relationship with you. I feel like you've never been a friend. I've never felt supported by you. You know, and I can't go on like this because it was so painful. I had come to this point in the work and I was making this attempt. Like, you know, there was this confusion around how do I detach with love, but how do I love? How do I express my anger without hurting? But how do I say it? How do I mean what I say without being mean? You know, how do I do this? And I said to him, you know, I just want to love you. I want to have a relationship with you. And it was the one and only time in my life with my father that he broke down and cried. And that shocked me. And I wasn't looking for, you know, what I was trying to do was communicate in a way that finally felt like I was in myself with my emotions, having them in the company of my father. And he acknowledged them. Now, this is a man that I watched, you know, punch the teeth out of my brother's head. You know, this is a man who regularly put holes in the walls. This is a man who screamed every day. And this is a man who you never knew what was going to come next. And the nature of the relationship with him shifted. And I'm not here to say that I was right or wrong. But I think what the most important thing I have to convey is that I couldn't go on without me and without being acknowledged. It had simply come to that point. And it was very interesting because over the following months, my father actually wrote letters to my two other brothers. And, you know, he didn't become a saint. But we spoke more regularly, right straight up and through the time that he died. And actually the night that he died, I was at his side and I was holding his hand when he took his last breath. And I actually felt such completely free love for this alcoholic. And I think that the power of that is in the silence that I started with. I want that silence. I never knew that silence had the quality that it holds. And all the work that has taken place is what has given me that silence, like that ability to actually sit in silence with myself instead of trying to control the actions of other people, speaking into conversations that aren't going to benefit me because I'm afraid, trying to control situations. or also sitting in silence out of fear. I think it's also important to say that I've never actually been in a meeting of this size at a podium, you know, so it's kind of a little weird, but I mean, it feels pretty good. It does, it feels pretty good. And what's been most surprising and beautiful is really learning and being in the joy of my life and who I am. Who I am for myself, who I am for other people, how I perform service, how I deal with day-to-day problems in life, how I interact with people who are struggling with their own healing, how I deal with other alcoholics, sober or dry, or active. I think that this is the most important thing that I have in my life. This is why when Stephen asked me to speak, I just said, yep, I'll be there. Because this is what gives me my life. And to be hugged when I walked in the room, you know, I put out my hand and it was bypassed. That's a wonderful feeling. I'm not baffled by situations the way I used to be. I generally have an understanding of how to respond. The heartbreak of the relationships that I have in my life with other alcoholics, the times that I went through with them. My aunt, I loved that woman so much. Dorothea Ripperger. She was the head of clinical biology at Brookhaven National Laboratory. First woman to leave her community, go to serve in the Korean War. Oil painter, beautiful woman, funny, alcoholic. Drunk driver, knocking shit over, like in the car with me in the car and a friend of mine, feeling terrified, like, Aunt Dot, keep your eyes on the road. You know, not being old enough to drive, but asking her if I could. Because I believed that I could do a better job. But boy, that's the kind of stuff, you know, that stuff is healed today. And when I say healed, I love that woman. I love the memory of her. I see what the disease did. I see what it does. I see how it is in my brother. You know, I saw how it was in my father. I saw how my mother reacted to that as an Al-Anon. But I think that's probably the most beautiful thing at this point is I live with the memories and the scars of those things that happened. But I've gone through the work of feeling that pain. I've gone through the work of actually, you know, having one foot in the present and one foot in the past in the therapy session. Like, I was safe with the therapist in the work while I was remembering those things that occurred in different situations, you know, where quite literally, you know, my life was put in danger. My first girlfriend's mother, drunk, driving drunk, station wagon full of us. She totaled the car with all of us in it. Unbelievable. It's just, you know, high school friends. A number of them that never made it out of high school. People that I loved, you know. So I think that there's this kind of, it's a fascinating thing to live in the recovery of Al-Anon and as an adult child of an alcoholic, as a codependent, and to live in this altered state called life. Because I don't believe I was really living in life before. I think that it was a way that I had constructed for myself to live, to be able to survive through a violent alcoholic home. So yeah, today, you know, I can put that loving space between me and another alcoholic person who is not in recovery. And I'm not responsible for the choices or actions. I don't have to be quiet. I don't have to run and hide. I don't have to think 4 and 5 steps ahead. Generally, I won't stay in the company if I find myself in the company like that. I generally am not in situations where that might occur. But what this gave way to for me was a spiritual practice. And I think that that's something that I was searching for through my whole childhood into my young adulthood. And the way I practice today is in the healing arts. And I think that's a direct gift of this recovery. Because it took decades for me to gain enough belief in myself and self-esteem, self-respect, to believe that I could do this, that I could work with other people and, you know, with the trust of other people to help them heal. And I think that's a sacred thing. And it's also a very fascinating thing. Because paradoxically, my job is to look for the things that people are suffering from, to be able to diagnose them and treat them. And it's not up to me to tell them. You know, that would be like the perfect Al-Anon slip. Let me tell you, you know. Mm-mm. No, and then to witness the beauty of a shift in that person's spirit. And to know that as I am working with someone in service, I'm receiving it too. And that's an exchange that I didn't get and that I don't get with unhealed relationships, alcoholic relationships. And I was tied to that. I didn't know anything else. It was really, you know, just a series of events that were like very serious that I had to look at for what they were. And so, yeah, I don't know that I'm going to go on very much longer. Or I could. That's an unknown slip. Just for you, no. But not to fake that it's quiet. To know that I'm not in control of the quiet. Not to pretend to be something that I'm not, out of fear of being rejected or abused. Not to withdraw out of fear of being seen. Not to speak because I don't think I have a voice. Not to move into the next right thing and ignore my heart, because I don't believe I have one that's worth listening to. Those things aren't true. They're simply not true. If it wasn't for everyone in this room, I wouldn't know the difference. And I can feel that in the air and in the quality of the silence. So thank you for giving me that, an understanding of what that is for myself. That's what I brought across the country with me. And that's what I'm offering to you tonight. My understanding of the silence that you gave me a chance to receive. Thank you.
Would anyone like to share? You will need to come up to the